You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening. Anyone would like to ask or share anything?
So I'm feeling this amazing amount of tiredness in my body. It's like putting one step in front of another is like difficult. It's almost like I'm finding reasons not to come to the meditation hall. Sometimes it's like, oh, it's lightning and thunder and maybe I should stay back, or something other is happening. And I'm feeling like maybe I'm tired and maybe I should sleep and stay back and maybe I'll go to the next session. And surprisingly, it's like when I do literally drag myself up here, I feel better. And it's like, you know, when I'm lying down and doing the meditation, it almost sometimes feels like I'm sinking into something. Mm. So I literally had to tell myself to sit up today because I'm feeling like I'm sinking into something. And so this is one part of what I feel. And the other is an extremely pleased with myself kind of mindset that, oh, okay. So I came here to find this about myself and I'm feeling very enlightened. So it's either very upsetting or it's very enlightening. And it's like, okay, it's almost like I'm telling myself that either ways, I just want to go back. So either, okay, so I've been enlightened and I want to go back, or I'm feeling so tired and depressed that I just want to go back. And I'm always telling myself, okay, two more days. Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah. Yes. Welcome to day 4. Anyone else? Sound similar? Sound familiar? So when it's usually even on the second and third retreat, it's hard to notice that that's what it feels like on day 4 often, or day 2, whatever. Day 2 and 4 and 6. So it's cool that you noticed all of that and that you're still here. Dogen, this Zen teacher that I've mentioned a couple times, talks about sort of even one meditation untying so many thousands of knots of difficulty. And maybe there must be billions of those knots, but so along with just keeping on going and noticing that even though it would have been so easy all those times not to come to the hall, something got you here. And it can give a sense of kind of like that there's at least two of me. And there's the one that's like, no, I don't want to go. Or I don't want to go because it's thundering and lightning and these very good reasons and more sophisticated every day. But there is this other me that comes anyway, sometimes, many times. And just that is very instructive. And finding for ourselves the rest and the restfulness that helps us slide from up here, where I think this is me, and I've got to have this conversation with myself about why I shouldn't go or why I should go, and just where we sliding down into something that's just going. And similarly with difficulties with people, there's a part of us that sort of doesn't have room for anybody because we're so sensitive, and then somewhere that, despite ourselves, is close. And then gradually bringing that with ourselves, that there is a closeness with myself, even though there's also all of this pressure and criticism and rules that we've adopted, and rebellion against the rules and so on. So I think there is a process of resting, and gradually, not in a straight line up, like better and better, like, yeah, but gradually more rested, but then more rested, more is revealed. It's kind of like as if the water of pressure or whatever our thing is starts to find its way to drain out. And there's less pressure. But then what was under there is like, oh, gosh. And so the fact that you're here still, having seen that, and having allowed that, yeah, is instructive. Like, it does really reveal that what stays is not what we think. What decides is not what we think. And still, just the basic practice of noticing the whole anatomy of the mind state. What's the trigger? What kind of thought? What kind of feeling? Where's the friction between what would be harmony or what would be home and what I'm kind of buying into in the sense of lack, and where that goes with the story? And it can be so hard just to realize that my mind state is my mind state. And apart from whatever situation that's there, this is my mind state. This is sort of in here. And that it does, the mind state does respond sometimes to some extent to kind of pruning the story. And in another way, it's just changing the channel. That noticing that up and down, as also Jodi G mentioned yesterday, higher and lower all the time. And that even equal to is not a satisfying place to live. There's still a measuring and a looking outside to try to confirm something that never feels firm. It never quite arrives, doesn't sink in. It's never finished. It's always like, yeah, but are we still equal? Or now I'm a little better, or now I'm behind. And so gradually, that sense of what feels home, or joy, or clear, or spacious, whatever the textures are for you, or the kind of fragrance, and what doesn't. And allowing ourselves to follow our nose. So sometimes it's just by, like, we see how ridiculous the story is, or it's so hard because there is a certain kind of pleasure and excitement in believing that I'm right. There's something in there that's pleasant, but then gradually we can feel even that pleasantness is unpleasant especially compared to home or so what's cool is that the pruning, so noticing this is a thought, noticing this is just the mind state, I can feel it in the body, I can change the channels to feel something more direct. I can feel the ground, or I can hear a sound. I can tune to my deeper wish in this lifetime. May I be at peace, may there be peace. And if we thought that's all that we had to help us, then we would have reason to be frustrated and worried and disappointed, because it isn't enough. We prune and then it comes back again. And sometimes it's like in the sort of myths and fairy tales where cutting off the head and 10 grow back. So it's relatively so worthwhile, the basic practice of being in the body, noticing thought as thought, really understanding the anatomy of the mind state, of the especially the disturbing mind state, and knowing that whatever was the outer stimulus, this is happening in me. But that isn't something to be ashamed of, and there's not really like a fault involved. It's not like your fault that you feel angry, or your fault that you feel small or big or up or down, enlightened or hopeless. So pruning sometimes allows us to get closer to feel what the root is. And we've been talking more about the root these days, like which I suggest is often about pain or our resistance to vulnerability. And gradually that softening the soil so that we can get in, the love can sink in and soften the soil and find the root of our avoidance of being with what is. But meanwhile, there's also this thing that you've discovered, that still something dragged you to the hall. Still something already, without doing any retreat before this, noticed that you were lying down and sinking into something. I thought you meant like sinking into the ground. I was like, great. No, it sounds like something else. So you sat up. And even though you have conditioning of being the good girl and you're supposed to be still, but you sat up, because that was good to do. Something set you up. So that's just the kind of last week. We talked about awe. This week I used the word humility, and somewhere those being sort of two sides of one thing, that we do need to do our little bit of work, which is a lot of work for us, but it does a little bit of help. And luckily, because the conditioning is so strong and our fear of being alive is so strong, basically, luckily there's some deeper kind of nature that comes along. So when we feel upset to see the mind as enlightened, and then it might as well give up now with our tail between our legs, and we feel how much of the day is kind of like there's graffiti, that graffiti is all over every experience nearly of enlightened or despair. And we can attend to that. Like, we can care about the painfulness of that, attend to it, but knowing that that's just relatively a small part of the picture, and that luckily, you know, getting that it's so pervasive, the mind's version of what's happening, which is involved with hope and fear, enlightened and, what was the word you put for the other side?
Depressed.
But as we started to say yesterday with Jodi G, like, even if it covers everything, it's just this thin layer on top, and it doesn't get in to this other me or this other layer that naturally is awakening, that's in the process of awakening. And that's where you get the chance to find and feel for your way of going with that, that you've had since a child, and often forgotten, all of us, not only you. I'm responding to your question, which is our, describing our situation, all of us. And so part of that is allowing, as we rest, sometimes memories or dreams come up, and we think, oh, don't be distracted, feel your belly or whatever, but it's a kind of message sometimes of like an experience where there's less of that upper me. So sometimes people would say there's less I, less me. But the way we're talking today is less of the upper me. And that it's just so many simple things that we already have, we already know, and usually have a tendency to avoid being caught up in being Lakshman with our purpose. The purpose that's forgetting its purpose, to call the guru. And so just sometimes walking and we feel transparent, or just looking at the leaves on the ground and there's a quietness. Singing in your mind and there's just some kind of music kind of in your spirit. It's not just words and vibrational tone or whatever. So just sometimes a memory or texture comes of experiences we've had, our inner language of just when that measurement of above, below, or equal is more quiet. When that defense of above, below, and equal is more quiet. We know it in our bones. And exactly because it's not me, that upper me, it doesn't get taken into account when we're like really, we feel maybe I'm wasting my time here, we feel upset, or I'll never get this, or I already know this, or whatever. In those moments, there's no way, like it's like as if with our hands we're trying to catch water to say, but look, there were other experiences. When the measurer encounter is trying to do the accounting, it can't keep track of the more important. Textures and knowings. And so this goes really well with the next part of the poem that I had started yesterday from Wendell Berry. So maybe I'll read a bit of that, and I'd love to hear if you have any more questions or anything to share. So he climbed up through the thicket, and there was the bird song somewhere within it. Every leaf a tongue. So he goes on walks for his rest. His day of rest is a day of walking. And he was sort of one of the beat movement in New York, but then he moved back to the countryside where his family was from, and was a farmer, activist, poet. I reached the last stand in my going of woodland never felled, a little patch of trees on ground too poor to plow, spared the belittlement of human intention, from time before human thought. They bring that time to mind, their long standing, and our longing to understand. But a person is small before those who have stood so long. We stand under them, look up, see, know, and know that we do not know. I reached the last stand in my going, of woodland never felled. The last stand in his going, so he's coming to where he'll turn around eventually. He's coming to where he was going. The last stand, in English you can say a stand of trees, so a small little wood. Of woodland never felled, so trees that weren't cut to make farms when people were at that in that place cutting trees to make farms. A little patch, so a little spot of trees on ground too poor to plow. So this is another way of talking about the way that all of our, that part that wants to be useful and wants to be used and wants to use other people and things, the upper me, doesn't have any chance of touching the lower me, so to speak, because it doesn't see any value in it, because it can't hold on and it can't use it. And so in this metaphor, the ground was too poor. It wasn't worth bothering to cut all the trees down because the ground wasn't rich enough to use and use up. And so the trees were left. So this is a fun thing when the mind is busy with being above and below and equal to. That what that above and below measuring mind sees as something as poor soil that we can't be bothered with. And that part of us that has been left unused now gives us a chance to feel what's the richness of having been taken as poor. How good it is to be in the ignored pile sometimes. I reached the last stand in my going of woodland never felled. A little patch of trees on ground too poor to plow, spared the belittlement of human intention from time before human thought. So we've talked in the last week especially a lot about intention. And I've highlighted this phrase, the belittlement of human intention. I think if we can feel that sometimes from a place of lack, we try to come up with what would be that really good intention that will make me be or feel worthwhile. And if I give myself to that, then I'll be saved from my lackness, from that thing that's secretly wrong with me, from that pain or that fear. But whatever intention we come up with, it's like me and them, in and out, and me going somewhere, and wherever I'm going, that one direction that I could go with my intention. Even if the intention is, may there be peace everywhere on earth, and I'll dedicate my life to peace everywhere on earth. However much we try to make it be a big intention, passing it through our mind, through the lack mind, makes it narrow, makes it a belittlement, makes it not big enough for the vastness of life, not big enough to factor in everything that factors in, that comes together in everything that happens. And to feel a tree or a rock that was before human thought, to realize that the world was before human thought, and that without human thought, so much goes on, and how much we miss when we're caught in the human thought. and how fun it is not to miss so much. They bring that time to mind, that time before human thought. So even a cloud, if we consider where that water came from and how long it's been going around and through how many beings. If we consider anything, we can kind of let ourselves into that flow. We can feel that it includes us. Kind of like letting ourselves through a finer net that just sort of breaks off the cap of that upper me, the belittlement of human thought. Our small purpose, however grand we want it and try to make it sound to ourselves, maybe to others. They bring that time to mind. Just sunshine that's already been on its way for so long. Starlight. Even the way the starlight or the sunshine hits the design of the human eye. The design of the human eye being before human thought almost. Not to mistake our understanding of the design of the human eye for the designing of it. Or as ownership of it. Or as ownership of everything that we think we understand meets that sunlight, that starlight, that eye. When and where does it become mine? And feeling how much room there is for you and me and us down there in the lower me. How much room there is in that time before human thought. They bring that time to mind, their long standing and our longing to understand. But a person is small before those who have stood so long. Do we dare to be small? To let those who have stood so long be as big as they are. And to feel that it's friendly. We're used to trees and we think we know trees because we got a word for them. And sometimes it's like, oh, it's a pine tree. I like double got you. I know you're a pine tree. But like, just to feel that it's friendly. And whoa, that is tall. I don't mean it's safe, like the branch might fall on your head or whatever. Be careful. But it's not because you're small and the tree is big that there's any problem. Or that good feeling to be small next to the big tree is any danger to you. To let you feel how good to be small. Before those who have stood so long, we stand under them, look up, see, know, and know that we do not know. Are there any, do you have anything more to say? Are there any questions? Yeah.
I felt a similarity to the, let's say, kind of breaking down conceptual views of looking at things. Where I was sitting, and I came to this point of, like it felt like I kind of sank down to a sort of tension that had the kind of receiving and meeting experience, like the going out and the just receiving. Like I say, like a tension was kind of pulsating both. Of them. And the more I sort of relaxed into that, but like the slower, the kind of vibrations of receiving and going out to meet. Almost like going from a kind of bee, like more like a train, kind of but also kind of like a new kind of tension started to happen. In the sort of relaxing around that. And when I think back of it, it's almost like a, like a feeling of suffocation. Sort of.
And what do you think that was?
The suffocation? Like a little bit too narrow kind of approach to the experience. Putting too much energy into it. So it became kind of narrow. Narrow and a kind of dead end instead of open.
It sounds like maybe the preference for the receiving, like making receiving up and going out to meet, was down.
Yeah, that's the relaxation was the kind of, let's see if it can just be receiving, like total receiving.
Yeah, yeah. And it's cool to see how, or to hear how, like, somewhere the making of that subtle goal of, like, let's see if we can make it be total receiving, is ends up being a dead end. And at the same time, those drops of practice, like, coming through, it's kind of like if we're a well where water is, and gradually cleaning the well. And so another little trickle can come in through the sincerity of struggle and discovering, like, along the way. This is one thing I wanted to also share with Bayal, was like, along the way, like, we do our best, and then along the way we realize, oh well, that was another subtle up and down thing, or that was a subtle intention to that, and a narrowing.
Yeah,
but it's still good. It still gives something.
The sort of, the experience felt very authentic until the intention came in. Let's see if it can be 100% total receiving.
Yeah.
That's probably awakening behind it.
Yeah. So the hope and fear wakes up. So just even now, maybe feeling back to when that thought came of, let's see if we can make it 100%, which is a wonderful intention. If we're going to have an intention, great, that's a great one. If you could feel in your own experience through memory how it was, where that thought came from, or anything like that, either now or inviting that to come up sometime. The felt quality of being afraid of and hoping for our idea of enlightenment.
Sensing the depth of it.
Mm-hmm.
So then good. The hope of us going
good.
Deeper than anyone's
good.
Ever gone.
Good. Yes. Good.
The fear of losing it.
Yes. Yeah. Cool. And then we can get the, like yesterday we talked about the hypocrisy of those setups. Here's this depth. And then I, instead of staying true to the depth, I jump to as if to honor the depth, as if to achieve the depth, as if to do the depth, I leave the depth. And I think mixed in there usually is a fear of the depth. Something in us would rather have a small purpose that we can be busy with than open to that depth. Though it can be bottomless, but it also may have some, could you describe at all? Do you have any words for what you just call depth now, in terms of texture or any other word?
It's a bit like the feeling of like the observing of this, of the receiving of experience. When that started to kind of fall apart, or it fell apart. Together with the, like when the observation, more a kind of feeling of oneness, that the observer was falling away, and so the experience would be more kind of, it's like sinking in between the vibrations. Kind of. So yeah, in a way like the observer and the observer coming, melting together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which we can also say our constructed sense of separation started to lose energy and reality started to be felt or whatever. We could, but I think both could be have some truth in them, those statements. And any felt sense of the texture of that oneness? Sorry to put you on the spot, but just in case something happens to come up.
The texture.
Or the whiff. A whiff, like a anything.
Like it's more like an images. Like kind of colors mixing. By if you're lying between two strings that vibrate, yeah, then the colors kind of start to meld together. Me being the colors, kind of, and it's like starting to mix.
Cool. Yeah, nice. So melting, mixing. Gets a feeling of some richness also somehow with the colors. Cool. Anything more that you want to ask or say or share?
Like some doubt whether or not we actually receive or go out to meet. Anything at all.
Good. Great. So this can be one of the kind of fruits of so practicing and then feeling there was something a little off in the way of practicing with the hope and fear and the narrowing. And yet even so, it kind of, it feels like that plowing that came up maybe last week.
Yeah.
Plowing the earth. So then that the whole language that I use often about going out to meet or receiving, the limitation of that as metaphor and the hope and fear that get associated there, just, it's great that can get plowed under. Jaya said to receive and not to go out to meet. I'm receiving. Maybe I can receive.
Yeah, but you know, that is a concept of to receive.
Totally. That's great. That's what I'm really happy to hear what you're saying. To that, even when the teacher said something, that gives sometimes an extra charge of some kind towards rejection or acceptance. And we can get tripped up on that. Because the language is metaphor.
So what's happening if we're not receiving and not meeting?
Mm-hmm. You tell me.
That's another concept.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Let's go a little more into the poem, maybe, before we end. Oh, this is just exactly what you're saying. So the next part of the poem, explanations topple into their events, merely other events, smaller and less significant. They disappear or die away like little cries at sundown. And the old trees receive the night again in dignity and patience. It goes on more, but we'll come back because of the English is hard there. Explanations topple into their events. So in probably my most beloved text, the Yog Vashisht, and one of my favorite lines in that, Ram is talking to Vashisht and asks, he says, I've heard that people say the world is not real and that doesn't sound true, so is it really receiving or going out to meet? Like that kind of thing. People are saying, Jaya is saying receiving, but is there something to receive and someone to receive it, etc. And Vashisht says, it's not that the world is not real. The world is real, but our way of taking the world, our way of filtering it, the way of knowing it is unreal. And so our explanations about the tree, for example, or about our experience, which usually is that upper me measuring, there's not often a real need to explain much. And so it's the unnecessary explaining is usually about the upper me trying to be protected. So explanations topple into their events. A topple gives a feeling of something that was maybe tall that falls. It's not just a little fall. It's like something that got really built up and then it topples. So a tree or a tall building topples. An ant, in its own world, I guess it could topple over. But so he's implying how much we get into constructing our explanations, or how much the upper me is into that anyway. And then luckily also, because it's constructed on the false sort of basis of lack, it does topple. We do come into the experience and what, like, is there really going out to meet or receiving? because it's constructed unnecessarily, it will fall. That's part of that, like, well, we do our best pruning, but luckily that's not all that we have going with it, for us, with us, carrying us to the hall. So explanations topple into their events. That's in another way to say what Jens was just describing, really. The unnecessariness of the explanation falls down into the actual fact that there is something going on, there is a world. And our way of taking it has really no meaning. We're trying to make meaning, and it ends up having no meaning. And the explanation being merely other events, smaller and less significant than what it's trying to describe. Does that make sense?
Can you repeat
that? Explanations topple into their events. So what we're describing, and then the description falls into the actual fact that something is going on. The description of it falls into the event, into their events. Merely other events. So I'll start again. Explanations topple into their events. Merely other events, smaller and less significant. So the description or the explanation, the measuring, the up and down, ing, is just merely other events, smaller and less significant than, let's say, that undercurrent.
The word
merely? Merely like only. Like, it's nothing more than another event that's just smaller and less significant. They, so the explanations, disappear or die away like little cries at sundown. And the old trees receive the night again in dignity and patience. Present beyond the complex lineages of cause and effect. Each one lost to us in what it is. So now he's talking about the trees. So from the explanations back to the trees. So we've been small next to the tree, and we've been explaining about the tree to basically ourselves, trying to comfort and find safety in our explanation about the tree because it's so big, and that can tingle that part of feeling threatened by smallness. Though when we go into the feeling of smallness, how good. So it's really our fear of smallness. But then, meanwhile, the trees are still there. There's the under me also. So the old trees receive the night again in dignity and patience, present beyond the complex lineages of cause and effect. So all the factors that have come in and are keep coming in and keep going on to make things, complex lineages of cause and effect. The trees, in dignity and patience, present beyond the complex lineages of cause and effect. Each one, each tree, lost to us in what it is. So the part of us that wants to explain it, it's lost to that. It's lost to us if we want to know it in that way. If we want to know it as the small with the big, we're lost with it together in the way that Jens described. For us, the privilege is only to see within the long shade the present standing of what has come and is to come, the straight trunks aspiring between earth and sky, bearing upon all years the year's new leaves. For us, the privilege is only to see within the long shade the present standing of what has come and is to come. May our practice and lives be familiar with dignity and patience, and the long-standing presence that we could devote ourselves to as a momentum towards awakening for all, including ourselves.